Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. Come explore news, information, entertainment, and ideas from a pagan point of view around the globe. Tune in every night for interviews and lively discussions on current events, philosophy, traditional and not-so-traditional practices, DIY projects, the who's who and what's what of our growing pagan community right here on Blog Talk Radio in English and now in Spanish. Powers of life fill me and enfold me. Suffuse me and empower me, awaken me, the fire of passion, courage, and creativity, which burns within. As the fire in the night banishes the dark, so may the fire in my belly banish all that holds me back or frightens me, that I may live in the light and seize the joy of every moment. There is one power in the universe, and I am a perfect manifestation of that power, proud, beautiful, and unafraid. No power may hold me back or cage me, for the power of the Spirit is in me. I rejoice in my life and in every action. I love and am loved in return. I reflect the light of deity in my life with boundless passion and creativity, with which I honor myself in the divine, for that which is above is like unto that which is below. Yea, both are equal, for neither is complete without the other. But together, all things are possible. Welcome to Pagan Priestess, and thank you for joining us. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world. You are tuned into the Pagans Tonight Radio Network, and this is Tracy Logan Wood, the hostess and juggler of sound on the Pagan Priestess Show. So tonight we have joining us AC Aldag, and Lisa Spiral has called in because Tracy is sucky and forgot to get back to her to schedule her in. So I always have some snide comment to make about something, so but thank you for joining us, Lisa, so consider that sort of an apology.
I love you, Tracy, is the snide comments you make.
So how are you ladies doing?
Great.
Good.
Very good. So, Lisa, it's been a while since you've been on the show, so you did, like, the whole month of September. And our disability, which proves that you're like a trooper because you were there every Friday.
Well,
just like me. So I guess I'm a trooper too. So what have you been up to since you were on the show?
I did the Women in Spirituality Conference in Mankato, Minnesota.
Last weekend,
which was really nice. It's been going on for 31 years. And I got to do a couple of workshops, had some really good feedback, met some wonderful women.
Excellent. That's pretty cool.
Yep.
Are you going to be writing any articles about your experience or anything that we can see on a blog somewhere?
I may actually write a real article. My blog, which is on WordPress, lisaspiral.wordpress.com, about the weekend, is really about how miserable I was when I got home because it hurt so much. But I should write something really about the event as well.
Yes, it sounds like an adventure. You should do that. So what about you, AC?
Well,
what have you been up to?
Well, we've just been preparing for Nasgalanguap, also known as Samhain or Halloween, doing all kinds of things involved for, you know, leading up to the holiday. For instance, we took a group of little kids to a pumpkin patch, and that was really a fun experience, doing a lot for the harvest and doing a lot for preparing for visiting with ancestors and things like that. And we also had two stray kittens show up. They were like, they were a birthday present. They just came walking out of the field and were like, hello. So that was kind of a fun experience.
Yes, you had a birthday. Happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you. The big 5-0.
Wow, that's a significant birthday. Did we do anything special?
My family took me out to a really nice restaurant, and then we came home and watched the debate and played the debate drinking game.
That's good. I'm excited because I know you're scheduled to be on one of the guests for Pagan Science Radio for their whole political have it outies. Yes?
Yeah. Maybe we could play the debate drinking game for that, too. Every time a person says a certain word, such as, say, deficit, you have to take a drink. And it doesn't have to be alcohol. You can, or you could do a silly dance or eat popcorn.
Yes, this is true. Well, we were joking about that because we often joke about the Pagan Tonight drinking game. Because drinking games are popular. It started out like back in the 90s. Well, I'm sure it existed before that, but the one I became aware of was the Star Trek The Next Generation drinking game.
Oh.
So there were all kinds of things that the characters did that you could drink for. So, but on Pagans Tonight, if you listen to our Wednesday night show when Ed and I are on, you take a drink every time Ed ums, which means you're probably going to be completely trashed halfway through the show. Because Ed ums a lot, so, you know, that was kind of my way out of busting on him about how much he ums. But, you know, I have to say, the umming isn't nearly as bad. And I won't mention who it is, but I listened to another podcaster's podcast, and she was horribly sick. But she proceeded to sneeze, cough, and blow her nose through an interview. It was terrible. If it wasn't something that I really wanted to listen to, I would have shut it off just based on that. So, but I'm kind of a punk like that, so what can I say?
Mm-hmm.
So, our topic tonight is spirit communication. And I was peeking through my reference material where they did specifically say that the difference between the word spirit, if it is capitalized, it's making reference to deity. And I capitalized it in the title. So we're not making reference to deity. We're talking about spirits, lowercase s, as in deceased humans or spirit guides or things like that. So I wanted to clear that up before we jumped into the topic so I wasn't confusing anybody. And I also want to say that there is a person in the chat room whose name I will not try to butcher, so I'll just say you're a doll, because doll is part of your name, who is getting to tune in for the first time live instead of in the archives. And they were super excited, so I love the enthusiasm in the chat room when somebody's really excited about a show.
Hi there.
So, ladies, what would your opening comments be about spirit communication? Because, AC, this is kind of your topic, so I will totally let you take the lead on this one.
Okay. Well, as you mentioned, a spirit can be a deceased human or a guide. It can also be the embodiment or spirit of a place or an element, like, say, the spirit of a tree, or some people consider little spirit beings such as fairies or gnomes to be spirits. So This is about talking with them.
Which you haven't had a problem with. Your problem is shutting them up.
Yes, it is. I need to listen to or buy a book on how to make the ghost be quiet. It's 4 okay. o'clock in the morning. I don't care what your pancake recipe is. I want to go to sleep.
Nice. So how about you, Lisa? What are your comments on this topic to open up?
You know, my book, Manifest Divinity, talks about all forms of divinity, not just deity forms, but also ancestors and spirit forms as well. And I think that, you know, some people are much more comfortable when we're talking about this kind of direct communication, working
mm-hmm.
with what we would think of as the smaller spirits. But I agree that they come in all sorts of forms and shapes and sizes, and a lot of what you get depends on the framework that you're open to.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. I would have to say I'm one of those people that's kind of uncomfortable with it, which strikes a lot of people as funny.
Yeah, that's interesting because you do so much of it in your tradition.
We do. it's kind of funny. I'd have to say because I have been around so many mediums and channelers, and I see the different ways that it affects them physically. And I always kind of, I'm a control freak, I guess is some of it. So that not being in control of my body at all times is kind of an issue for me because, you know, even in getting involved with African diasporic religions where they welcome that type of spirit manifestation and what they call it being a horse. So I had to have a very clear conversation with the person I was working with at the time because I was like, I don't want to be possessed. I don't want to be ridden, none of that. And how can I prevent that? Because I'm really uncomfortable with it.
Well, I think that's a really important point. And I do think that, you know, we have choices. And I think that, you know, people like AC, you've probably been doing this since you're itty-bitty little, and it's just sort of the way things are.
Yup.
but when you're approaching it like a lot of pagans do I would like to be more open to this kind of thing, knowing where your limits are and knowing where your boundaries are can be really important.
Absolutely, and I do want to say that there's no shame in not wanting to do it or do this type of work. So for me, I listened to a really interesting woman, an interview with a woman who we're going to be having on the show November 14th. She wrote a book called Weaving Memory that is all about like working with the ancestors and guides and stuff like that, and. So a significant thing she said is at some point when it's kind of a thing for you, because the spirits do try to communicate with me even though that's not what I want, we have made sort of an agreement about what's acceptable to me by means of communication. So I did find that point where it's not mediumship for me, it's not a full-on channeling, that I can hear them when they need me to hear them and when they need to communicate something to me without me feeling like I'm being violated.
Right. That's important. I also think you can make agreements about when you are and are not open to that kind of communication. You know, so you can say, it's like setting office hours.
that's a very good way to put it.
That's
communication office hours.
They don't always realize what time it is and that you might have to sleep and go to work or, you know, they're waking up the baby.
Yeah, that's an important thing to say. Like, do not talk to me until I've had at least two cups of coffee.
or, you know, when I step into this outfit or when I put on this necklace or when I'm in a circle or, you know, whatever your framework is.
Not in the shower.
that could be one of those things.
I don't have any problems with it in the shower. That's sometimes the easiest time for me.
It's relaxing. I also want to point out that just because a spirit is related to you or lived in the house before you or of your tradition doesn't necessarily make them nice or benevolent. If somebody was nice in life, they're probably going to be nice after they've passed. But, you know, there are jerks out there.
If somebody was a jerk when they were alive, they might be a jerk after they've passed on to the other realm. You know, not every nature spirit is benevolent either.
Well, and they all have their own agenda, which is not necessarily yours.
Mm-hmm.
So, very true.
The best intention. You know, if you guys are not going the same place, that's not always helpful.
Absolutely. So where do we want to get started with the actual communication part? Because there are so many different ways. And the best thing I heard as far as, you know, working with spirits and some stuff like that is that there is a lot of variation in working with spirits. It's not like baking cupcakes. So that was a quote that I heard somebody say, and I was like, oh, that's such a good way of putting it because, you know, whereas AC and her recipe for working with spirits might need flour and water, and I might need sugar and salt. So there's a lot of variation. So where do we want to get started with this?
I would suggest that, first of all, we start with how to protect yourself.
Absolutely.
If ground and center according to your tradition and shield yourself. That doesn't necessarily mean you're going to not hear unpleasant truth. You know, it might, like, the spirits might tell you that you're going to get fired next week. And, you know, grounding and centering isn't going to make that go away. It's something the spirits have to tell you that you might not want to hear. But grounding and centering can prevent things like somebody attaching themselves to you and taking your energy, which they might not do on purpose. It might just be, you know, they do it without consideration. They don't realize that it's harmful to you. There's different ways of anchoring yourself to reality. I mean, you hear all the horror stories about somebody going crazy. I've personally never seen that, but I have seen people like have nightmares or not be able to concentrate or be really, really agitated after they've done some spirit communication. So they want to anchor themselves to reality using some sort of visualization or some sort of sound, like, you know, playing your favorite song in the background or visualizing a white rope that's attaching you to your favorite pillow in your bedroom and being able to bring yourself back.
Okay, that's good stuff. Do you have anything there, Lisa, as far as suggestions for prep?
I think that doing that there and back again practice outside of spirit communication, you know, doing meditation work and bringing yourself back, doing astral projection work and bringing yourself back, that practice of bringing yourself back, I think is really important before you get into this kind of stuff, if you have the luxury. I also, you know, there are people who surround themselves with white light for protection or who ask their patron deity to watch over their interaction with the spirit so that the things that come in or who, like I say, only work in a circle.
Okay, that's all very good stuff.
I very much like your suggestion about you can talk to me when I'm wearing a certain dress or in a certain place.
Yeah, or, you know, when I'm doing a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's, you know, if you're going to do this type of work or attempt this type of work, that Lisa's suggestion as far as, like, you know, doing it in a circle, that when I do a circle and I do this specific thing, I'm letting you know, like, it's cool to come talk to me. So I like that very much. And I am going to hijack a piece of paper and make some notes because, you know, Tracy has this list thing. So I will kind of prattle through the list at the end of the show and rehash it for everybody at the end. So go on, ladies. So prep work important.
I wanted to mention that this time of year is especially beneficial for it. We've all heard the phrase, the veils are thin. between this world and the next. There's also metaphors of portals or gateways or doorways that open at this time of year. And so that it's just easier.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. It's easier, and it's not just easier in what we think of as, you know, sort of European paganism, but there are a lot of cultures who celebrate that relationship with their ancestors at this time of year because it's easier.
I think so, too. I think that, you know, the veil is definitely thinner during this month as we're leading up to Samhain. But I think it's really on people's minds. You know, the new horror movies all come out. You know, people start thinking about things that kind of spook them out.
And all the decorations with all the tombstones and ghosts and things like that, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That might be a good time to talk about wards. We often use our jack-o'-lanterns and some of our decorations as wards. You know, the old saying about them frightening away evil spirits. I don't necessarily believe in good and evil, but I believe that a ward might give you some kind of advance notice that there is the encyclopedia salesman on your doorstep, so to speak. You know, hey, there's a spirit here, and they might not have your best interest in mind, so you might not want to talk to this person, send him packing.
You know, that's an interesting concept. I like that idea. We, in African stuff, we put food outside to distract negative spirits. And we use this stuff called cascaria, and we'll put it on the doorstep so that negative things can't come up. And it actually dissuades them. And it was funny because my husband and I were told to do this on a specific occasion, and it kept these people from coming in our house. We'd invited them in, but they had just stopped by to pick something up during a party. And they were like, no, we don't want to come in. We'll just stay out here.
In other traditions, they have putting a broom outside the door, and the spirits have to count all the straws before they can come in. And there's the legend about hanging the ears of corn or wheat on your door. Same thing. They have to count them.
Well, I love all this kind of stuff. I love when we get into the symbology of why we do some of the stuff we do during this month.
Some of the stuff that our ancestors came up with, they did it because it works.
I still love talking about it, though.
Because mm-hmm.
sometimes it's not always in your conscious mind of why you're doing something.
Because
mm-hmm. it does just become tradition, so you just do it without conscious awareness sometimes.
Right. And you've got somebody on the chat room saying that they're using bind runes to keep spirits out of the main house, those kinds of things as well.
That is good stuff. I think I will have to incorporate that into my, like, Samhain decorations because I hadn't thought about, you know, incorporating runes into it.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good idea.
I love that idea.
Well, a lot of the Dutch painted symbols that they put on the houses, and I cannot remember for the life of me, the name of them is not in my head.
The hexing symbols.
Oh, the hexing. What I've heard. That's what those are for as well, traditionally.
Yeah, those were very appealing to me when I was much younger, before I really got into anything particularly witchy. I was very attracted to the symbology of those. So what else do we want to, what kind of prep work do we want to do before we get into the main actual communication techniques? Anything else?
Yeah, we might want to talk about some of the you know, just getting your mind in the right place and you know, prepare yourself for what you're going to hear. You know, I would say, just like if you're going to go to the tax adjuster's office, it might not be good news. So, you know, mentally and psychologically and spiritually, prepare yourself and emotionally for what might happen. You know, don't look at it with dread or fear. Just be prepared that there might be some news that's a little challenging, and why the news that's challenging is being imparted to you is so you can do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's all good stuff to consider before communication. Absolutely.
I think it's also really helpful, if you're going to do this kind of stuff, to have your journal or your notepad or your whatever, your tool that you're going to use, ready and prepared. It's, you know, if you're going to step into this kind of work, to try and remember what's been said 2 days later is sometimes difficult for people. So to be able to
absolutely
take stuff down.
That's a very good point to make, because any time I've given oracles, I never remember what I say to people. Although, I will say that in doing oracle work, I'm not meant to retain it, and I don't, because it's not for me.
Right.
But in the realm of communicating with spirit, then the message is likely for you. Or something you need to remember. So that's a very good point. Pen and paper, yes, you should.
I was also thinking that if you're communicating with somebody that speaks a different language than you do, you can write it down phonetically and then go look it up.
Yeah, that's a good point to make, too, that not all spirits communicate in a language you understand.
Try taping it or taking pictures, it might not work because electronics and magic and spirits don't always mix very well.
Also very true. So what are your favorite methods of spirit communication? Either of you, both of you, or?
I like to have tea. And I know that sounds kind of odd, but I do. I like to set up, if I'm going to consciously go looking to talk to a spirit, I like to set up a space and have tea and pour tea for me and whoever it is that I'm inviting in, and sit and sip and listen, because it puts me in the right headspace.
I like that idea.
What we do traditionally on Samhain night is we'll have a bonfire outside and sit and stare in the bonfire. We do not cast a circle. And usually you can see the gates opening, which it's weird. It looks like the mist, because we almost always have mist here. We live in a swamp. It looks like the mist parts, and then you can see figures actually coming out of it. And the fire and the wards help protect you. And sometimes you can bring objects of people that you wish to communicate with, or symbols of, say, elements or, you know, places or objects that you want to communicate with. And it naturally just kind of closes the gate or goes away when there's dawn, or we live on a farm, so when the rooster crows, and that's another traditional thing. Now, I realize this isn't practical for everybody. Not everybody has a noisy rooster. So what you might want to do is set the alarm on your phone, or set, like, some other kind of electronic device to have music come in at a certain time so that it ends the session and, you know, kind of automatically anchors and grounds and brings it to a conclusion. Is what you're describing like an all-night vigil? Yes. It's not always all night, though. I mean, sometimes you hear what you're going to hear by 3 o'clock in the morning, and then you get to go in and go to bed. But often it begins at sundown or midnight, depending, and goes until dawn.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the time it rains on us, too, because we live in Michigan, and
it often rains on Samhain. So you might want to set up, if you're living in a place where it rains all the time or it's cold, you might want to set up so that you're not out there communicating with the spirits and then wake up with frostbite, because that would be bad. But just prepare yourself physically to make sure that you're going to be comfortable and safe.
Absolutely.
I think that's really important. A lot of other people that I've talked to use scrying, either with a candle or a mirror or a bowl of water. A lot of people use a Ouija board. I've heard a lot of mixed reviews on that. To me, it's just, you know, somebody spelling out something is the same as, say, Facebook, but other people have difficulty with it.
I do want to say that Pagan Science Radio will be tackling the science of the Ouija board this Sunday.
Ooh, that's a good one to listen in on. And then a lot of people also do a dumb supper. Dumb meaning, of course, not stupid, but just not talking, not speaking. And they set a table with food for themselves and set a place for their loved one and give them food and sit there and eat in silence. And sometimes people put a mirror in the chair. I've heard of other techniques too, putting candles around. If you have small children, this isn't going to work. But if you're doing this with older people, usually later at night, just the act of being silent, you can often hear the people speaking or see images in the flame of the candles.
Mm-hmm.
I've also seen a dumb supper done where, and we were talking about, you know, whether we're talking about an invocation or an evocation, whether the spirits are coming into us and writing us or whether they're outside of us. But I have heard people do a dumb supper where they sit down and they open themselves up to their ancestors and whoever comes in, that they each bore them that way and aware of what their likes are and what they want to eat and how they experience the food. And it's a very different thing than if it's an evocation where you're eating next to your ancestors and listening to the table conversation that they're having.
Absolutely, that's a good differentiation to make for people.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, Lisa. I appreciate that, telling us the difference. Once again, I also want to point out, you know, there's spiritual ancestors, and then there's your ancestors, as in they biologically related to you, and you know, other spirit entities. And these different techniques might work differently for different people or entities.
Different kinds of entities are going to respond to different things, and you're going to have to be in different relationships depending on what spirits you're looking to talk to.
If you're trying really hard to communicate with a specific person, you might want to have some kind of object that reminds you of them. Say, you know, your dad's tie tack or your favorite teacher graded a paper and you want to talk to them. And you might want to serve their favorite food or play their favorite music, create some kind of situation that's comfortable for them. And you might not have this great big revolution. It might be, you know, change the oil in your car. Or it might be something, some really important revelation, like, you know, you really need to think about changing jobs or something like that. Or it might just be, hi, how you doing?
Could you guys stop bothering me? I have other things to do.
Yeah, time to move on. Or it might be that you have some kind of difficulty in your relationship. So like they had some kind of expectation of you that you're not going to fulfill. No, I'm not going to be a doctor, and no, I'm not going to be heterosexual. I'm going to be gay, and I'm going to be an artist. You're just going to have to deal with it, Grandpa. And if Grandpa doesn't deal with that, that's Grandpa's problem, not yours.
Right.
You trust.
Absolutely. So I wanted to say that I put some links for Witch School Store on spirit communications and other things that might help you if it's not something you're well-versed in. We have books. Go check them out if you are interested. Wow, I stopped you, Cricket.
I was trying to think of some books off the top of my head, and I'm drawing a blank.
You know, and so some of the books, and I want to say that, you know, so what I posted was Spirit Craft Meditation, Raymond Buckland's How to Communicate with Spirits, and then Creating a Sacred Space for Prayer and Meditation. There are some books who don't cover the entire topic, but will mention, like, ways to get started in their books. I would probably have to say that any and all Scott Cunningham books probably have some little chapter on talking to spirits. I think, you know, it's best suited for what works for you. Like I said, there's a lot of variation. It's not like baking a cupcake. So I think there's going to be some level of experimentation involved for people who this is a new thing for them.
Well, and it's not just what works for them, it's what works for the spirit. So it's a coming together of technique.
And that's a good point to make also. It's a mutual agreement of what's going to work best. So I was saying earlier that... So I had to get to a place where, you know, the spirits and I agreed on how they were going to communicate what they could communicate to me in a way that was acceptable to me. And it comes through a variety of inspiration of projects. I kind of hear a little voice that says, you need to do this. I don't know if there's a good way to explain the difference between one of the voices in your head versus a new voice that isn't yours. Because if you hear that way, I don't know if there's a good way to explain that without making you go, I'm thinking I have some mental health issues and or not.
So that comes again to the initial preparation before you even try doing this work. If you don't know who you are and what your own track of conversation in your head sounds like, you're not ready to do this kind of work.
Also, if the entity or spirit is telling you to do something that is harmful, that you wouldn't do normally, as in something that you know is going to cause yourself or other people harm. You know, just because you hear somebody do it, doesn't mean you have to do it.
We always retain choice. We're the ones who live in our bodies, and we're the boss of them.
Absolutely. So I will go a little bit more specific to clarify the voices in my head, because there are several. I'm not sure all of them are mine all the time, even when I'm not speaking to spirits. but the things that I was being told were about educating people more thoroughly on ancestor reverence. And the ideas came in a flood of projects of ways to do that. So it wasn't like bake your children or any kind of messages like that.
That's really positive messages. That would be really an uplifting kind of thing, I'd think.
Yeah, so for me they came in kind of a flood of several things all at once, and when I realized it was somebody talking to me, I was like, I need a pen and a piece of paper because you're saying this faster than my brain can comprehend it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What ways they come in, it's like a download or like a zip file. It's like all of a sudden you've got this big packet of information that's in your head that you don't know where it came from, and you kind of have to unpack it.
And that's a very good way of putting it. I hadn't thought of it in quite that way, but it is like a download. I can concur with that is what I felt. It was a download.
One of the other things that spirit communicates with sometimes in our dreaming, and you know how when you're dreaming and you recognize that the person in your dream is somebody that you know, even though they don't look or sound like that person, you know that's who they are in your dream. That sense, that feeling of knowing who they are, sometimes comes along with the message when it's coming from one of your ancestors.
Absolutely. So two things I want to address real quick. Somebody says, what, no baked children? I'm disappointed. I would have to say the voices that tell me to bake my children are not spirits. Those would be mine. But then again, you all have not met my children, although you might have heard me tell stories about them.
I don't get into the roaster anymore.
Right, yeah. Mine are bigger than a bread box and don't really fit into the oven anymore. But the other thing I want to address is I believe it was a question on one of the Facebook pages that somebody was asking about a dream that they had that they were pretty sure was a spirit communication. So this is random of me to bring up because it was on one of the Facebook pages. But they were curious as to why, and I'll throw this out to you ladies, why their deceased loved one would show up in a dream where their head was kind of rotten. And so I took this, and I was going to respond to it, but I hadn't responded to it yet because I wasn't entirely sure that I wanted to share it. So I had this crazy dream about my mother a few months after she had passed away. And it was very detailed, and it was very weird. It was also very gory. So the short end of this was that I ended up hearing a knocking noise in the backyard in my dream. And I realized it was coming from below the surface of the dirt, so I started to dig. What I ended up doing was completely digging my mother up out of her grave. When I got to her coffin, she was, like, completely, like, rotten and, like, already just going through the process of recycling herself. But it was very gory. And I think the reason for this was she was trying to make sure I paid attention to her by my surprise. But I was very calm in the dream. And she only wanted to let me know that she was okay, that she was in a better place. But she had to catch my attention in a certain way to make me remember the dream and pay attention to what she was telling me. So I definitely don't think she was out to, like, scare me or gross me out, but make sure that she kept my attention. That's my take on it.
You know, interpreting at this distance, you know, there's no connection between us and the person who wrote the note in Facebook. We have no idea where this is coming from. We don't have any context at all. So it could mean a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, you know, if you've got what comes to me with a deterioration of the head, if everything else is fine, is stop trying to analyze this and see it with your heart or with your body, feel it instead of thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that the person would, you know, that they're just kind of wanting some validation there. They know how they feel about this, and they know what it meant to them, and they're just kind of asking us to validate that.
Right.
You know, I would have to probably agree with that, too. Yeah, so that was kind of random there, but it popped into my head. I hadn't thought about it until just now, but I hadn't got back around to answering that person, and sometimes I just don't. There's a lot of Facebook stuff, and I don't have so many hours in the day to answer everything.
I do find that if there's a message that I need to hear, it starts off really calm and quiet, and if I don't pay attention to it, it gets louder and nastier.
That's a good way of saying that spirits will reinforce, you need to listen to them sometimes.
Yeah. I have a question for you guys, if you're ready.
Absolutely.
Okay. I hear a lot of the time about people who are stuck, spirits who are stuck and can't move on. They can't get on to the next level or get on to the summer land or heaven or wherever they desire to go. And they pester you because they're stuck. Now, I've had this experience. I've heard about it from other people. How would you advise someone to aid a spirit that feels they are stuck on this plane?
I think that is a good question.
This kind of work, you know, that really this is what they do. I personally think if you're stuck, most of the time it's because you're what you want to do is in conflict with what you ought to do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think that applies on the spirit realm too. I think they know that they need to go. They just don't. They're attached to something they don't want to let go of, and what they really want is to know how they can move forward and continue to hang on to the thing that they can't let go of.
I was wondering also if it was a fear situation, if they're afraid to reincarnate or afraid that they're, you know, if they're Christian, maybe not going to go to heaven.
That's very possible. I think that, you know, with any of the religions that, you know, have a lot of dogmatic experience, I guess is the best way to put it, that could genuinely be a fear of, you know, because people will often talk about the checks and balances of how they will be judged, whether it be by, you know, sin or karma. So, but, you know, for the most part, I have to agree with Lisa and say that I think we can offer some help by lighting candles for them and offering them certain things to help calm them and know that they, you know, have a general, because I think, you know, imperfect love and perfect trust can apply to spirits as well. Not in all cases, because not all spirits are, you know, good and awesome. But I think by lighting candles and making some offerings that it is a loving encouragement to help them. Cricket.
Well,
yeah.
I'm processing. I think the candle burning and the perfect love and perfect trust are good ideas.
Which again, even with that, you know, you can say that, you know, if somebody was a real jerk in life, it is quite possible they will be a real jerk in spirit, and no amount of candle lighting and offerings will satisfy that negativity.
Sometimes you just have to say, not in, you know, if it's a question of a haunting, you know, you've got a spirit who's attached to the place and that's bothering you. Sometimes you just have to say, you know, not here. Go someplace else, you know.
And that's a good point to make as well. I've had so many people over the years. And it's funny because I've always been, like, openly pagan whenever I'm in school. So everybody knows I'm pagan. So at some point I will get cornered outside smoking or in the bathroom, you know, hey, can I ask you a question? I didn't want to be in the classroom when I asked you this, but I feel like there's something in my house, and what should I do? And so I always give, like, the simplest thing, talk out loud to the spirit.
Yep.
And say, I'm cool with you being here if we can live in peace. If we cannot live in peace, I know a witch who will banish your ass.
That might be the last resort too. If they're breaking all your china and, you know, trying to push you off a ladder when you're changing the light bulb, it might be the time to do the ritual banishing.
But I agree that you know, those are appropriate times to talk to them and, you know, what do you need to move on or can we live together? And these are entirely appropriate questions.
Absolutely. So I think that's, you know, also things that people should consider, you know, with spirits and, you know, because, I mean, depending on where you live, you know, like I live in a very large metropolitan area in Chicago. So a lot of, you know, the houses and apartments and buildings that are in Chicago are, you know, 150 years old. And so people have died in them. And so, I mean, generally as a rule, I know there are always spirits in my house and I'm kind of okay with it as long as they're not disrupting the flow of stuff, I guess. Cricket.
I'm digesting again. Sometimes it takes me a minute.
I had a house.
That could be part of the drinking game.
I had a house that we lived in, and the spirit, one of the spirits, because there were several, one of the spirits who was haunting the house was a kitten. And it used to drive me crazy because I'd hear this kitten yelling in the corner. And I knew I wasn't insane because I'd hear the kitten and my cat would turn to look. and there wasn't anything there. It really was a ghost kitten, and it was a question of, you know, just like you said, you know, in terms of the tradition of leaving offerings outside the door, made a huge difference. Sometimes it can be really simple, just a matter of recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Leave her a saucer of milk.
Yep.
There you go.
I have a cute story if we have time. I think
you can tell that. I think we have a phone call. I'm going to check it real quick while you're telling your story. So go tell your story.
We bought an old wood cook stove from a nearby farm and put it in our kitchen, and we use it like to cook a big Thanksgiving dinner, to do canning, and to heat the house before we turn on the furnace. And we noticed the smell of cooking, usually on Sunday morning, stuff that nobody in the house was cooking. You know, we'd smell bacon or pancakes or, you know, sometimes in the evening we'd smell ham supper. And it was the ghost or spirit of the lady that used to cook for the family who originally owned the stove.
Uh-huh.
So we did some exploration. She's of African descent, and her name was Margaret, and she was buried in a, like, kind of 1950s or 60s, that shocking pink kind of nubby, fluffy fabric. So we went back to the house where we bought the wood stove and asked if they'd had somebody in their employ named Margaret and described her, and they said, yes, that was our the lady who kept house for us for many, many years. So she kind of tagged along with the stove. And we've had the paranormal investigators come in and do the things with the meters that read the activity. You know, they can sense heat and sense, they're almost like a Geiger counter. I'm not even sure what they're called. So it's kind of a nice experience to get up on a Sunday morning and have the whole downstairs filled with the smell of pancakes.
That is kind of cool. So as it turns out, we didn't have a caller. It was one of the hosts that comes on after us. So I do want to remind people. We have 5 more minutes left, but we have a new show that is coming on the air called The Tree of Life. And so they are talking about, I have to look it up, sorry. I'm getting old. I don't remember everything anymore. Tonight's show is Heathen Perspectives, The Hammer and the Pentagram. So that is what they will be talking on about on the Tree of Life.
Cool.
So right after the Priestess show, so stick around. I know some of you got used to us not having a second-tier show behind us, so you kind of go, okay, good night, everybody. And but we do have a new show following us, so stick around for them. So like I said, we only have about 5 minutes left. So what do you ladies want to say as a your final thoughts? Do you want me to go through my list first of what all we talked about?
Yes, please.
Give you a minute to think about your final comments. So for those of you who tuned in after we were already going, basically what we talked about as far as spirit communication is the first place you want to begin is prep work. And whether that be not necessarily trying to contact the spirit right away, but doing some practices as far as astral projection or meditation and maybe getting in contact with a reality tie while you're doing that, so to try to go out and then bring yourself back in. Those are good practice steps for prep work. But clearly setting up what works for you and what will work for a spirit in communication. So it's a mutually agreed way to communicate is a good thing to go. So you might want to specify rules of when it's okay to engage you with messages, if that is when I wear this flower in my hair or if I wear this hat and things of that nature. So it's always good in prep work. Say that again?
Not while I'm driving in traffic.
Yes, right. Not while I'm driving in traffic, not while I'm sleeping, not while I'm in the shower. You have to set up what guidelines and rules between you and whatever spirit. And then we talked a little bit about wards and ways to give yourself advance notice for spirit visitors. And wards, and somebody else in the chat room had said runes. So setting up some of those things that will help give you advance notice. As far as actually working with the spirits, doing prep for messages, preparing your mind for what might be an easy message or a challenging message, and know that they can be either. Also, to have paper and pen to write down messages that you might not remember directly following the experience. So that way it doesn't feel wasted to you like, oh, I did this great channeling ceremony and I can't remember anything. So that could kind of be disappointing. And then there are other specific rituals that you can set up, whether it be, you know, having tea, like an intimate conversation, and preparing yourself to hear messages, or other rituals that are relaxing to you that will let you reach out into the spirit realm. And then certainly we have suggested that, you know, if you kind of get a hinky feeling about a spirit that it should not be around, to perhaps know what ways in which you can banish a spirit or kind of kick it out of your space if you need to do that.
That would be a whole nother show.
Yeah, that's a whole nother show. So that's kind of the running list, ladies.
Well, I will share a story of a friend of mine who had all kinds of spirits in her house and they were annoying. And the fastest and easiest thing she did to get rid of the majority of them was post a list on a refrigerator that says, if you are going to be here, this is the list of jobs that need to be done.
Nice.
That works with teenagers, too.
Yes, it does.
Very true. So what are your closing comments, ladies?
I want to emphasize that if the spirit takes the time out of their busy spirit schedule to fix you pancakes or, you know, tell you how to fix your drain or, you know, even, like, really deep work about, you know, you really might want to consider this about your life and make these changes to...
Ew, what happened?
I don't know. Your emotion.
Say that again.
And,
you know. You have to repeat some of that. I think Ed's in there getting ready for the other host, and he accidentally pulled you into the...
Uh-oh. Can you still hear me? Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, good.
Say some of that again.
I'm just reminding people to express your appreciation and love for the spirit people who communicate with you, especially if they're your relative or your dear friend or your teacher, just to express your emotion to them. You know, thank you, Mom, for all you've done for me.
Absolutely.
I agree. I think that's a really important point. And also to remember that, you know, even if what you say is thank you, but no, that's okay.
And that's a good point to make, because we kind of started out with that, you know, it really is okay to decide that this isn't the work for you.
Yeah, you might just have to say, I appreciate your input. Not necessarily I'm going to do it, but I appreciate your input.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good thing to say. So thank you, ladies, for joining us. Where can people find you? When you're not here on the show?
I am on Facebook as A period C period Fisher Aldag, and also on magicalmedia.com.
Very good. Thank you. And Lisa?
I'm on Facebook as Lisa Spiral, and I've got the blog on WordPress, Lisa Spiral at WordPress.com, and I've also got my book, Manifest Divinity, which is available through Amazon.
Awesome.
Excellent. And I also can be found on Facebook, or you can contact any of the priestesses or hosts for this network by emailing us at pagans tonight@gmail.com. If you put the human you would like to speak with in the subject title, we will make sure that email gets to them. So thank you for tuning in to Pagan Priestess. And so since we were kind of talking about spirit communications and ghosties and things that might go bump in the night, we are going to, our transition song will be Kenny Cline, The Ghosts of the Lower Ninth Ward.
Cool.
So stick around for the Tree of Life. They will be following us. And blessed be, everybody.
Blessed be, and happy holidays.
Blessed be.
When I was young, I never dreamed of the sorrow, the curses, the places I've seen. Ghosts of old women crying out in fright. You can hear them haunting the bayou night. Bones that lie in the sandy soil, never really buried at all. Around the levee, can hear the whore, unquiet spirits of the lower ninth ward.
Everybody, or good morning, or wherever you are in the world today. Thank you for joining us this hour. This is the Tree of Life Hour. I am Rathanaya Dahl, also known as Ravenfire, and tonight is Heathen Perspectives. We're going to be talking about the Summer and the Pentagram, and tonight I'm joined by two wonderful co-hosts, Michael Vanson, who's the steersman from White Oak Kindred in Nashville, Tennessee, and Rick Barger, who is the organizer of Global Office Group. Welcome, guys.
Howdy.
Thank you.
Hey.
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear both of y'all fine.
Okay.
Good.
So I guess, guys, tell us a little bit more about yourself. Tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself and about your group.
Okay. Who, me first?
You go ahead.
Yeah,
sure.
Okay. My name is Michael Wilson. I am steersman of the White Oak Kindred here in Nashville. We are an offshore kindred that's about 2 years old. We founded on Ostara 2 years ago. We have four oath members and four probationary members that we call Lehrling, which is German for apprentice. And we are one of the rather more accepting groups in the area here in Middle Tennessee. We hold a lot of open events, and we generally invite the whole pagan community to our open events. We get along very well with the local pagan community and have a lot of ties, long-standing ties with the local pagan community. And we're pretty kick-ass. I don't know if I can say that, but we're pretty cool.
Yeah,
we do a lot
yeah.
of good stuff in the local pagan community. We actually, we do a lot of, we go to a lot of the general pagan events and teach classes on Ossetru. I'm actually doing one next weekend in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And
cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's called Personal Harvest, a weekend mm-hmm. of introspection. It's a Samhain festival held by Spirit of the Earth Church, and they're pretty good folks.
Okay, cool. That is awesome.
I know.
Okay, Rick, what about you?
I'm Rick Gardner, or Sifson, and I founded Louisville Area Ossetru. It's basically an umbrella group. There are several different kindreds or independent heathens in the area, and what I wanted to do was to provide a networking basis for them so that we can get together as a larger community. Often what happens with the kindred structure in the Norse is that people tend to find a kindred that they fit in with, and that's who they stick with, and they don't necessarily always interact with others. Or sometimes, since it's kind of hard for people to find Ossetru in the area, they might find a kindred that they don't necessarily hit it off with, and they just don't think there's anybody else in the area. So that's why I did this, so that there's an actual group for more people to contact, and that way that the pagan community also has a resource.
Mm-hmm.
I do different talks for pagan groups on what is Ossetru and introduction classes like that. And there's a lot of, we have meetups about every 2 months, sometimes more. It really just depends on what the people are interested in or want, but it's mainly for networking and for the people that don't necessarily have a kindred. A lot of times scheduling can be an issue, and I don't think that, you know, somebody should be without others of their faith just because they can't meet with a kindred that they found because they meet on, say, Sundays or what have you.
Okay.
I know.
All right.
Rick, I got to admit, I never even heard of you till, I mean, of that group until just now, but I'm glad that, see, there you go, you're already doing outreach. I can shoot some folks your way, actually. I know a lot of heathens in Kentucky.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Yeah, like I said, there's several different kindreds here in the Louisville area and independent, but there's not necessarily a lot of networking. Or one of the things that can happen with groups is when there's a divorce or a breakup or something, it seems like somebody tends to lose their kindred, and I didn't,
right.
I don't want to see that anymore.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I'm a little bit nervous. I'm going to hang in there. It's the first time I ever doing a radio talk.
This is my second time on air myself, so, you know.
And I'm sure I sound like some kind of crazy hillbilly.
Well, we're from Kentucky, so I don't think you can be that bad.
I was going to say, I think Rick's the only person who sounds like he's not from the South.
That's probably the first time I've heard that, so nice.
Okay, so tonight's topic, for the people out there listening, it's the article The Hammer and the Pentagram. I've posted the link up in the chat room earlier for anyone who's interested in reading the entire article. It can be found at www.ravenkindred.com/wiccatru.html. And basically the article kind of focuses on the similarities and differences between Ossetru and Wicca. And, you know, we find each other at a lot of events and a lot of overlap
that there are times when you've got the Wiccans who don't understand why us even do the things the way we do. And sometimes you've got a little bit, you know, confusion from the people who are also true, who've never really done anything with Wicca, wonder why Wiccans do the things the way they do. And it's a very good article that kind of gives you a comparison, kind of a compare and contrast the two religions. So I guess we'll start with there, and if you guys want to kind of take it away from there.
Okay. I would like to make one statement. This article, while it is pretty good, it's pretty antiquated. I believe that I would hope that the authors of it would actually revisit it and make some updates to some of the info, because it seems like a lot of it seems out of date.
I believe that I was reading it. It was written in 94. I haven't really seen anything recent from that, so, or an update to it, but
I don't know. So what we're going to do, we're going to talk about the first part, the similarities. Wicca and heathenry.
Right, if we can do that, those earth-based religions are some say.
Right on.
Part of the difference is there's a lot of, I guess, social differences between the people that are attracted to it, to the different faiths, and just how it's conducted. Azatruers are known for being blunt, and that can also hurt people's feelings sometimes.
Yeah.
One of the things go ahead.
I was going to say, I admin several Facebook groups where pagans and heathens get together, and it's always a good time. Plenty of flame wars going on and lots of hurt feelings. But yeah, I'm sure it can be pretty damn blunt.
Yeah. Oh yeah. If you want the complete, honest, and unadulterated truth, ask the heathen in the room, and you're going to get the truth. You just may not like what you hear, but it will be the truth. Or at least the truth from their point of view.
I actually just reread the article. It's been a while since I revisited the pentagram and the hammer, or the hammer and the pentagram. And I was reading it, and it was talking about the focus on the planet, the part about, I guess, ecology, or I don't know, how people think about the earth. And it's talking about how a lot of heathens, and I was just actually talking about this earlier on a message board, seems like a lot of heathens are more libertarian, and I was just, it really perplexes me as to how heathens could, like, be so conservative to where they would actually support somebody in politics that would not really care about the environment. And I can't really understand that. It really, like these, nothing again, I'll have plenty of libertarian friends, and most heathens I know are libertarian. That's like one of the first things that the libertarians want to talk about is slashing programs, including the EPA, which, you know what I'm saying, is the Environmental Protection Agency. And it really, I can't understand how they could have, like, a disregard for that or want to support a candidate that, you know what I'm saying, is really big about the so-called clean coal and other fossil fuels that are, like, totally destroying the earth and raping Mother Earth, however you want to take that in perspective. For me, it's Nerthus or Yord, and I can't really... I can't really see that. What do y'all think about that?
Well, the way I've always seen it is Midgard is sacred. You know, all the nine worlds are sacred, but Midgard is sacred. And so, you know, I'm of the firm belief that we need to preserve and protect Midgard, not just for us, but for our descendants who come after us.
Right on. Rick?
I completely agree with you. I think it's more of a, there's a sect in Azatru that believes in that political ideology. A lot of times they tend to be what are more folkish. But that doesn't have anything to do with what I believe personally. I mean, it's common sense. The EPA came about because rivers and lakes could catch on fire because of the chemicals in them. It's a body of water. It shouldn't catch on fire. That's
right on.
It's common sense to me.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that maybe could be revisited in the article, because I honestly believe that there are way more not so right-leaning heathens in the Austro community this day. I'm not blowing my own horn here, but I have like 1,000 friends on Facebook, and most of them are heathen, and almost every single one of them, you know what I'm saying, gives a crap about the earth, you know, they care, you know. There's plenty of them that are libertarians and stuff, but most of the heathens that I talk to on a regular basis, you know what I'm saying, they don't lean far right. And I feel like that article puts us all off as right-wingers, and there's actually a large left-leaning population of the heathen community that doesn't get addressed in that.
And of course, this article was written in 1994, so there's been a lot of changes, I think, in the heathen community. I think the more younger people, I think there's a lot more universalists running around than probably were when this article was written.
Oh, I guarantee it.
Yeah. And maybe
a large part of it was based on the stereotypes that they were trying to address. And the problem with the article or anything like this is it's going to be filled with huge stereotypes and generalizations, but that,
right.
They just did that, I think, in order to try to get a perspective of how each other view the other one. That way we can try to see what the similarities and the differences are, so we can at least get some kind of a grounding or a basis to start out with from the different sides of view.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. Touch on the concept of folkish and universalist for our listeners, because we have a lot of people who aren't heathens that are listening to our podcast, and they probably were throwing these terms around and they probably don't know what they mean.
Okay. I'll let y'all touch on it, because I really don't subscribe to either one of those. So I'll let somebody else with that, because I'm neither universalist or focused.
Personally, I agree with you. I don't think either term has any use. They're generalities between different larger groups. Folkish depends on exactly who you're talking to as to what they think folkish means. You will find people who call themselves folkish far more often than you will find somebody that calls themselves a universalist. Actually, just about no one refers to themselves as a universalist. It's something
that
folkish people do that. They mean it as an insult, and they're not even actually using the word correctly. So that just shows the ignorance in it. But folkish, it depends on what it means to the actual person at the time.
Yeah, that's actually exactly what I've said a couple hundred times. I don't know. I hardly know if anybody that refers to themselves as as universalist. That's usually, I usually consider that as, well, just like the word wicked true, which is amazingly in the title of this piece of literature that we're talking about. Wicked true and universalist, to me, they seem almost like derogatory terms that the uber focus use to describe anybody that isn't on the spot with them, that isn't on the same page as them, that has different views. It just seems like that's getting thrown out there. I don't know. I consider myself a culturalist. You know, I mean, I'm in it for the culture and the heritage. And a lot of people, a lot of people use the word heritage to bring the racialist stuff into it. But for me, anybody could be and should be heathen as long as they make an honest attempt to read and study the demonic culture and to live by those principles. You know, and that for me, I don't care whether you're black, yellow, white, or whatever, you know. Just as long as you're making an honest attempt to study the culture and to use that in your worldview, then, you know, that's what I consider myself, a culturalist. But I don't. To me, universalist, I guess that would be where the Wicca stuff comes in. I don't know. I feel like, to me, the term universalist just feels like eclectic, like somebody that's eclectic. Now, I guess, I don't know if they would be considered universalist or what. I don't know. I've been called everything from Wicca True to everything from my beliefs. But.
It really depends on who you're talking to and to what their definition is. The folkish perspective can be based on your opinions about people that are not of Germanic ancestry or Nordic ancestry following the faith or practicing it, to social political issues, to the type of person or thing you're into. Someone could very easily make an argument that somebody's folkish based on they want to keep their right, they want to have their rights to bear arms, that they don't believe in multiple partners and romantic relationships, and can contribute them, and the fact that they admit that they're into this religion, that one of the things that got them into it was because of their ancestry, and they felt a calling to find out what their ancestors believed in. That could be, that same person could be, by some groups would be considered very folkish. Others, that's just a person. It doesn't make any difference. Whereas it just actually depends on the group, I guess, or the person, because it gets into the different political leanings that some groups hold. You'll meet some people that go, that will talk about how folkish their kindred is. Well, if it's based on whether you think people that do or do not have the same ancestry as you can practice the religion, then how are you a more folkish kindred, or how folkish is your kindred? It's either a belief or not a belief. That's why I don't really get into it, because it's just a personal opinion about. It's very hard to have a word that can mean something to so many people that you can't come up with a definition of it, because you talk to three different people and it means something completely different. That's why I don't have anything to do with it.
I have to say, that's one of the things about heathenry. I believe that that's truly one of the reasons why heathenry isn't as widespread as it is, because we have a hard time getting together and communicating, because no two heathens believe the exact same thing. So there's no, you know what I'm saying, there's no super like structure like there is in the monotheistic religions, where there's numerous people that believe the exact same thing. And you know, it really does, it does depend on from kindred to kindred, from person to person, because I don't have the same beliefs as everybody in my kindred. You know, we were talking about that the other day, about the migration and how the deities have name changes throughout the different tribes of Northern Europe. And me and one of my kinsmen were talking about, I believe that it's the same deity. I believe that Wotan, Woden, and Odin are all the same god. And one of my kinsmen believes that they're separate, because they've taken on different aspects. So that's just different ways that, you know, that people's beliefs change throughout. I don't know.
And real quick, guys, we've got to pay the bills for the radio station, so we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back.
Okay. See you in a sec.
Before the internet, there was Green Egg, founded in 1968 by Oberon Zell. For over 40 years, Green Egg has been the leading journal of the emerging pagan movement, garnering numerous awards and worldwide recognition for its journal art, articles, and its controversial forum. Green Egg is now online as a beautiful full-color e-zine, edited by Ariel Montserrat and designed by Tom Donahue. Moreover, it's free. Collect back issues and subscribe at www.greeneggzine.com, because legends never die.
Minotic Gems offers a unique and unusual variety of vintage and modern jewelry items. My handcrafted creations include steampunk jewelry, crystal and elemental designs, cosplay accessories, wish wands, and beautiful bullets, my signature line of piece jewelry. My designs are perfect for all gift occasions, including holidays, birthdays, and anniversaries, as well as bridesmaids and groomsmen's gifts for weddings. I do offer custom pieces and will work with you to create something special just for you. Visit my website at mymysticgems.com to find links to both my Etsy and Artfire stores online. You can contact me at mymysticgems@gmail.com.
And we are back.
All right.
So I guess what are the differences between Lycia and Asatru, for someone who I would say like who's like say we have a lot of Wiccans who listen to this podcast. What would you say the differences would be like if some Wiccan decides to say come to a bloke who doesn't know anything about Asatru or Kingly or anything? What could they expect? You know, what is different from Lycia?
Okay, do you want me to talk about some of the major differences? Part of the big, I guess, spiritual difference is, as a true, we have one pantheon of deities, gods and goddesses that we work with, and we don't think that they're anybody else. Freya is Freya. Freya is not Kali and Birgit and whoever else you might want to attribute to her. Freya is Freya, Sif is Sif, Frigg is Frigg. And that's one of the big differences. We don't have the crossover. That often isn't, I guess, understood by some of the pagans or the Wiccans. We don't think the Freya and Sif just different names for one great goddess. We think they're great goddesses. We think they're the best. That's why we follow them. That's why we bring them into our lives. But that's not, they're not some generalization. That's one of the big differences. Just that, getting over that understanding is often the hard time. And as a true, often feel insulted when pagans or Wiccans don't understand the difference between it.
Yeah, I agree with Rick on that. Most heathens are, I say heathens a lot because a lot of people of our faith do not consider themselves Asatru, because Asatru is mainly modeled after the Icelandic version of heathenry. So I tend to use the term heathen a lot because there are a lot of different kinds of heathens. It's like an umbrella term, just like pagan covers Kemetic, Celtic, and all that stuff. Heathen can cover Anglo-Saxon heathen, Frankish, Germanic, Icelandic, Norse, and all that. So that's I'm explaining why I use the term heathen a lot. But most heathens are hard polytheists, and just like Rick said, we do not substitute one for the other, and there is no, I forgot what the term is that a lot of people use, synthesis, or I forgot what it is. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit in the cut. but we do not substitute one guy for the other. And most of the time, if you're at an Asatru bloke, you don't want to, if you're Wiccan or just general pagan and you come to an Asatru bloke, which is an Asatru rite, we call it bloke, we can get into that here in a minute. But anyways, it's generally, you would want, I suggest speaking with somebody beforehand, and they would give you the advice that you need to take during bloke. Because there are a lot of do's and don'ts, and there's actually some things that you could do during a bloke that could probably get you hit in the mouth or worse. And that's even for other heathens, because some heathens, I've seen a heathen almost get regulated on during symbol or not, because they didn't know, I mean, they just, there's certain things that you don't do. You know, some of them would be, it just depends on which deity you can hail at bloke. Some heathens do not want you hailing any kind of Jotun or thirst during bloat. You know, there's a big riff in heathenry over that. You know, a lot of people don't want, if you say Loki during bloat, somebody might punch you in the mouth. Unless you talk to the people beforehand and they tell you it's cool. You know, because some people are accepting of things. You know, some people are more open than others. I don't think you'll ever see an also true right that's skyclad. I'm pretty sure that's a big difference. Now, check me out by the fire after the bloke. You might see something going on. No. Ain't that right, Raven? No, I'll just play it. No, but we don't mix any kind of sexual or anything like that with our rites. We don't do that. Most heathens save that stuff for afterwards. Now, like we've all said before, a lot of heathens do things a different way. But as far as I know, I'll speak for myself and like Andrew, that we do not do sexual things during the rites. We don't have any like sex rites or anything like that. We save all that kinky shit for afterwards when we go home or to our prospective sleeping areas, and then we, you know, do what we do. Okay, go ahead.
That's pretty common. Yeah, one of the best rules that I've always gone by for a different bloat or rite or whatever you want to call it is you would be hailing or honoring a Germanic or Norse god or goddess. It's usually most bloats are specific, or you get an idea of which deity or deities they're working with, and that's the one that you would mainly focus on. Another thing that difference in structure is a lot of Wiccans and pagans have a whole lot of different ritual and ceremony that they put into their rites that we don't have. We don't have corners that we don't call corners. A lot of Azatru don't even do anything where they hollow the area. That we feel that since we have a personal relationship with our gods and goddesses, we can just speak to them as they are. I don't need to try to hollow and make this place safe because Thor's coming. Thor's not scared of anything. He can take care of it. Nobody's going to get in the way of me giving Thor his due. So that's one of the big things that I know a lot of Wiccans are really big into, the calling of corners, and there's a lot more ceremony in Wicca or paganism as a general rule than is in Azatru or heathenry, whatever you want to call it. It's more of a hearth religion. It's usually kin or friends, an extended family, and it's more of a personal relationship. As Michael touched on, I've never heard of any nudity in any Azatru rites. That's one thing we don't do, and they're safe for children to come to because there is an emphasis on the family and the kindred.
Right. Exactly.
And one other thing that I've noticed when going to bloats and stuff, and I've been to bloats with both White Oak when they were at Pagan Unity Festival, and then, of course, I come to a lot of the Louisville Officer bloats, and some people don't understand this, when we're doing a bloat, that an open bloat, that there's a big thing about not giving oaths.
And I don't think
very many people outside of the heathen community understand how seriously we take those and how spirit and what that means. If you all could please touch on that for us.
Your word and your honor and your worth are tied together. We put a lot of emphasis on your personal responsibility, your reputation to get something done. You are, in essence, that's why a lot of people don't want to be tied to it. One of the reasons why Wiccans and pagans don't necessarily always get along is a lot of Azatru put a lot of emphasis on the people they are associating with and that they are doing their right to. There is a belief by quite a few in heathenry that they are, in essence, tying themselves to the people that they are doing a right or a bloat with. So some don't want to mix with people that they don't know very well, that they can't trust or depend on, that they haven't built a personal relationship with or believe that their word and their is very important to them. There's also a segment within heathenry that believes that if you do an oath at something like that, that the people there are also tied to it as well. If you don't follow through, you are affecting their luck and their might and main, so they don't want to be connected with that. But it just comes down to your word and how, and your what you say you're going to do and how important it is. It's not something that's taken lightly that you can just get out of. There's usually you have to have shield. There's some way that you can get yourself out. But you're, if you say you're going to do something, well, you lost both your, you know, you lost your leg in a car wreck. We obviously can't, you know, be a professional basketball player, whatever you said you were going to oath to. There has to be some way to get out of it practically. But it just mainly comes down to your word and how serious we take it, like the rite of blood brotherhood or sisterhood. It's your word. You're dependable. Dependability is a large belief within the heathen community and being held accountable for what you say you're going to do and what you've done.
Right. With our kindred, the only time we ever do any kind of oathing during bloat is on the high days of Midsummer or Yule. That's like the two highest days. We do kind of things that some heathens would consider too wiccany. We do a lot of the Sabbaths, as you would say. We do a lot of open events, and while I was doing that, we do a lot of open events with the pagan community. But most of the time, whenever we do an event where we're doing oaths like Yule or Midsummer, that's all the time closed, and a closed event where it's only just us there, the kindred or in our immediate families or very close friends. Usually, it's somebody that's been like vetted and approved by everybody else. Like if I was going to bring somebody to a Yule bloat, I would ask my kindred. I'd be like, hey, is it okay if I bring this person? Because there could be an oath being taken there, and you know, and we don't want somebody there that we don't know well enough, because just like Tom was talking about, weird and luck, those are two big things. And one of the times that you see a lot of oaths taken, or I haven't seen many oaths taken, but during Sumble, which is another religious rite that we do, some people call it a rite. It's a more of a ceremony. It's nothing as spectacular as you would see at Pagan Pride Day, some the Wiccans doing or anything like that. It's mainly the community coming together. The hosts would throw an event, and the heathens from around would come together, and it's mainly a social event, kind of. You know, some people consider it a religious event because some things are going on, because weird is a powerful thing. And the passing of the horn, most heathens consider that as when you're passing the horn and you speak over the horn, it's like speaking into the will of weird. And what you say there immediately affects everybody that's in the room, like the whole collective. It's kind of like, I've heard so many people say this in different books and stuff that I've read. It's like dropping a pebble into a pond, and the ripples affects everybody, you know. And so that's one major thing about oaths during Sumble is you don't make an oath during Sumble unless you know that you can keep it. And if you make an oath during Sumble, most of the time there's going to be a fool there to make, and if it's some outlandish oath, then they're most likely going to challenge you on that, you know. Arthur, she's a bad woman, and if she thinks that you're full of crap, then she's going to call you on it. And if you can't do it, you're not making the oath. And if you try, then we're probably going to have to boot you out. You know, hopefully that would never have to happen. But I've seen it almost happen at an event earlier this year. A thule is a person that watches and maintains a record of what's going on during a symbol. Sometimes they'll even write down everything that's going on, like transcribe it. And they are basically there to make sure that the luck of the folk is protected. That's my personal opinion. I believe that they are there to protect the luck of the folk, to make sure nobody makes outlandish oaths, to basically to keep the peace and order and luck of the tribe or those gathered in the area. What do you think on that, Rick?
Some groups don't even have something as... That's pretty much their focus, yeah, but some groups don't even have the thule. It's just an oath that's only taken during a particular kindred event. Like you said, it's very rare. It's not something that's done very often because of the seriousness that's put into it. And one of the other big differences between a heathen ceremony or rite and a pagan or Wiccan is we're not trying to raise, a lot of them are trying to raise an energy, and we're not trying to do that. We're there, if we're doing a particular bloat to Odin or Thor, we're there to honor them and to make a connection with them. We're not trying to raise a bunch of energy to send out. But that goes to show part of the difference is you'll meet most Wiccans or a lot of Wiccans, they practice some form of magic. Magic is almost a central part of what they do. Whereas in Azatru, it's more of a relationship with the gods and the ancestors and your kin, your kindred. Some do practice runes or do stays or something along those lines, but it's not necessarily a determining factor in someone's religious faith. It's almost a separate issue. One thing is there's quite a few people in heathenry that don't like the idea of someone chanting runes over the horn. Some would do that to charge it or the hammer hauling, but the theory is, I don't know if you know how to do that. So that's something that can be taboo in different areas as well. Whereas in a lot of Wiccans, it's a magical ceremony, so they don't have any problem with that, whereas heathens don't really know if you know what you're doing.
That's right. Personally, a priest in Ostru, our Gothi, he actually does the hammer right before each bloat that we do. And, you know, it's nothing spectacular. I think that it really kind of sets the mood. It's not like raising power to me, but he does it in Old Norse, and it gives me chill bumps every time he does it. I'm not going to lie to you. I'd love to learn how to do it in German, because I've seen a guy do it in Pennsylvania Dutch one time, and it just blew my mind. You know, like my back went stiff and everything. But, you know, I noticed that sometimes pagans that come to our events, when they see, when they actually attend the bloat, it's like, I guess it's not as much as they were expecting, because I was just recently at a pagan pride day, and these ladies, these were witches, not Wiccans, actual witches, and they like did a very intricate rite, and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool, you know, they're doing all this stuff, you know, and our bloat is like 5 minutes long. It's like, you know, hammer hauling, you know, state the purpose while we're here, pass the horn, give blessings, and then give the offering, a closing statement, and then the rite's over, you know, and it's very short. And a lot of times, most general pagans and Wiccans that come to our stuff are like, wow, that's pretty short. Like, you know, well, we get the stuff done. We don't have to do a whole lot of other stuff, because mainly we're there just to honor the gods and to make an offering. So, and that's one big thing. A lot of kindreds don't do the hammer howling and stuff. You know, some people think that's too wicked true or whatever, but that's something that our kindred does, you know, and a lot of kindreds do things different ways, you know. I've attended a Hussle game before with some Anglo-Saxon heathens, and it was pretty awesome, you know, that we actually did the walking and singing. The person leading the rite was, like, singing a song in Old English, and that was pretty awesome as well. But, like we've all stated, you know, it just depends from tribe to tribe, kindred to kindred, how a rite goes. Ours aren't terribly exciting. But they serve the purpose, you know, and it brings the folk together. And we honor the gods, and they seem pretty happy because, you know, good things are happening all around us.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Something else I've noticed is, and if you all could touch on this, our relationships to the deities, the differences with our relationship to the deities versus other religions' relationships to deities, not just Wicca or paganism in general, but, you know, we've got a very different view of our relationship with the divine versus different other groups, if you all could touch on that.
Part of the big difference, I would say, is that we believe that we are descended from the gods, that they are our eldest ancestors, and we believe that we descended from them. We look at them as our friends and our family. In the sagas, somebody was normally referred to or would say that they were a friend of Thor or a friend of Frey. Because there's that general closeness to the gods and the goddesses, I guess that's one reason why there's such a lack of ceremony. We look at them as our old friends that we're inviting and having come over. We don't believe that they're untouched, that we can't talk to them, that we can't work with them, that they are bothered by us talking to them or whatever. It's just the personal closeness that a lot of people have to a particular deity or deities that they work with.
I have to say, I try to work with a lot of the deities. Most heathens try to work with all of them all together equally, but there are some few that, like you said, friends of Thor. You know, sometimes you feel drawn to a different deity more than the other. I was drawn to Ostru, period, by Odin. You know, I was going through a really rough time in my life. I was actually incarcerated at the time when I became heathen. And he called to me. You know, I was attending regular pagan services, and, you know, I was thinking about the whole universal power and of the earth and everything like that is all interconnected. And then a person came to our group one day and was talking about Ossetru and was talking about Odin. And I remember hearing about Odin through, like, music and stuff like that. And that dude sounds pretty cool, you know. I'm going to read up on him. And then once I started reading, it's just like, it just clicked, and I just knew that Odin was going to be a central part of my life. And now that I've become heathen, I've been heathen for a little while now, you know, Odin, he's kind of stepped back, and he's like, you know, he's like, good job, buddy, you know, you're doing good stuff. And now I'm feeling more drawn towards Wayland the Smith. And some people do not even consider him a god. I feel like he's one of the Vanir. I know it's a separate tribe of gods in Ossetru. But some people try to incorporate all of them. I mean, I still hail Woden, and I feel very close to Frigg. But some people, there are some people that consider themselves like god spouses, like they are married to gods. I don't know much about that stuff, so I'm not going to speak on it too much. It makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable. But everybody's got their own different personal relationships, just like Rick was saying, with the gods and goddesses. You know, it just depends on who you are and how they call to you, I guess. I don't know. I could never see myself being in that kind of relationship with a god or goddess. But I do feel like, you know what I'm saying, they're not here like some hulking entity over me that's like going to smite me if I do something wrong. And, you know, they might not even give me great big hugs and pats on the backs if I do something right. But I know they're there, and they're going to nudge me in the right direction. And they're going to smile on me. You know, if I do good things, they'll do good things to me. It's not like, you know, like I said, it's just personal relationship with the gods. I don't know. I like them all a whole bunch.
And there was a comment in the chat room. It says that from one of the people in our chat room, it says it's a belief that they are more powerful than us, but not above us, is how they see it. It's more like they are our friends or our guides, or for better or worse. You know, in my life, I have Odin and Freya that like to kick me around and, you know, set a task before me, kick me around and give me this challenge. It's like, okay, I've got to rise to this challenge. I've got to do this and I've got to do that. But it's not like, it's almost, you know, it's like they're our elder kin. They're not, to me, they're not like way far away that I have to like be afraid of them or be afraid to come to them. And that's kind of how I see it.
I believe that's how most people see it.
Yeah.
Now, there's very few that do the whole God spouse thing and all that. Most heathens generally believe that the gods are our friends, and they're there. That's how Thor, he's got the high feet, friend of man, you know. Thor's the friend of man, you know. He's like, he was the everyday man's god, you know. The guy working in the field. He could also be the warrior dude's god or whatever, you know. Some people just felt closer to certain ones, and I don't believe that anybody was like, oh, God, here comes Thor, you know, let's all be afraid and all this stuff. You know, most of them was just like, hey, you know, he's here, that's cool.
I was going to say, here comes Thor, let's go break out the mead, you know.
Oh.
So.
All right.
Yeah.
So what else is going on? The concept of harm none versus the concept of non-noble virtues.
Yeah.
Talk about that. Personally, I'll take the turn the other cheek.
Actually, I think we're starting to run towards the end of our time.
I know.
Time flies when you're having fun. I do have some events that I need to announce. We can probably go about 10 more minutes. So if we can maybe talk real quick about harm none versus the virtues, if we can maybe sum it up in a couple minutes, and we've got some upcoming events and some upcoming episodes we need to talk about real quick.
All right.
Okay.
You go ahead, Rick.
Well, one of the differences is they believe that you should harm none. Some Wiccans believe that for their magical practices, or I've seen it accused that they won't try to hurt or curse anybody, that sort of thing. Others look at it as a philosophy on life. But then there's heathens that use the nine noble virtues. Some use different foods, and some just use the Havamal as the best resource. One of the biggest differences is the concept of they won't hurt anybody or no harm is that they won't do any bad, whereas if you look at an overall of, like, say, the nine noble virtues, is that is more of a form of accountability and dependability if you look at them in as an overall. It's more of a, we believe in your honor, you believe in being truthful and your word meaning something, versus it's how you conduct yourself. If that makes more sense, it's more of what you describe yourself as being and attributes of yourself versus just a don't hurt anybody.
That sounds pretty good to me. Yeah, I believe, you know, some people take the non-noble virtues and try to use them as a dogma. You know, I've met heathens that are so conservative that they try to take the non-noble virtues and apply them in ways that they are almost like the Ten Commandments. But, I mean, I live by the non-noble virtues myself. You know, it's, to me, harm none, do as ye will. You know, it might not hurt anybody immediately, but I'm heathen and I believe in luck, and I believe that my descendants will, you know what I'm saying, will be recipients of my luck. And I try to do what I can to maintain it. You know, it might not hurt somebody else, but it could hurt me. You know, what happens to me could happen to my descendants. If I go out here and I do all these wrong things and it doesn't hurt anybody else, you know, it could still hurt my descendants. If I mess up their luck, I mean, people in my family have done jacked up stuff, and, you know, and I've done plenty of jacked up stuff myself, and that's one of the reasons why I try to live by the non-noble virtues, too. I guess I'm trying to repair my name. I don't know. That's basically it. And the whole, I don't know, it seems like one of the main differences between heathenry and Wicca is the whole pacifism thing. And I guess that goes with the harm ye, or do not harm ye thing. The heathen, you know, we do what we got to do to maintain with our family. You know what I'm saying? We have to provide for our families. And if that means that sometimes we have to do something that somebody else might consider to be a bad thing, it might not be a bad thing if that's what it takes for our family, because that's the most important thing to us, in my personal opinion. I'm not saying go out here and rob a bank because there's plenty of other ways to make money than rob a bank. But there's some things that, you know what I'm saying, that some people might consider, it's the whole thing where people think good versus evil. Most heathens don't consider good versus evil. I don't believe in evil. I believe certain degrees of right and wrong, and there's a lot of gray areas. I'm probably going off on a tangent here. Okay. Anyway, so nine noble virtues are good. The other thing is it works for them. You know, it works for them. I don't subscribe to the do as you will, harm you none thing. I try to stay away from ye's and thys and thous because it sounds too much like something old that I don't want to get into. Right on.
Yeah, I've got some upcoming events that I need to announce. These are all mostly in the Louisville area. For our listeners here in the area, if you're curious about attending any of this, this weekend, Matrix on South Shelby Street here in Louisville is having the Roots of Awareness Psychic Fair Saturday and Sunday from 1 to 6. Sunday, the Light Song Group, and they're in Hardin County, Kentucky. They're having their Samhain celebration at Saunders Springs, and that's going to be at Radcliffe, Kentucky. It's at 3 p.m., and they can be found on Facebook under Light Song Group Elizabethtown. Also on the 21st, Louisville's Cups Group, which is Covenant of Unitarian Universalist Pagans at First Unitarian Church. They're going to have their Samhain celebration that starts at 5:30, and it's going to be a potluck for anyone who's interested. On 10/29, Pagan Community Ministries, and they're out of the Matrix on South Shelby Street. They're having a full moon ritual at 7 p.m., and they'll have snacks after the ritual. Also, the same group on Samhain, they're having a ritual at 7:30, and they're having a potluck supper afterwards. On 11/3 and 11/4, the Northern Kentucky Psychic Fair, it's a benefit for Robin Hood's Community Center, and they are a community center based in the Northern Kentucky Cincinnati area. They do a lot of stuff for a Santa there. A Santa thing that they do for kids who aren't going to get a holiday this year. Various other charities that they do for people who are disadvantaged. It's in Fort Wright, Kentucky, which is right across the bridge from Cincinnati. If you're interested in that, go into that. The website is nkyexplore.web.com. And of course, as always, the Tree of Life Community Center. 12/22/2012, we are having the We Survived the End of the World Pancake Breakfast and Pajama Party at Applebee's on Outer Loop here in Louisville, Kentucky. It starts at 8, goes to 10. It's $7 a person. If you want to get in on the pancake breakfast, please contact us at facebook.com/treeoflifelouky. Next week's episode, I'll have a friend of mine on. We're gonna have a very interesting topic since it's the episode right before Samhain. We're calling it "Tis the Reason for the Season," Samhain. It's gonna be a very interesting episode. We're gonna talk about ancient times and modern times. We're gonna have an episode on 11/2. We're gonna talk a little bit about the election, which is right now, of course, is a hot topic with everyone. And our next heathen episode will be 11/16, and we're going to talk about honoring our gods. Do any of you guys have some final thoughts or anything you all want to add real quick before we in the show?
I just want to thank everybody for tuning in, and the next episode I'll try to be a little bit more prepared, or I'll be less nervous at least.
Exactly. Yeah. I really do. I appreciate everybody tuning in, and I'm going to try to do the same, this initial thing. I'm a little bit nervous. But I also would like to make an announcement of White Oak Kindred in Nashville, Tennessee. Every second Saturday of the month, we hold a Nashville Pagan Coffee House at Cafe Coco. It starts at noon, and everybody should come out and check us out. If you're in Nashville and you're pagan, you come on out. Most of them it's just us heathens, but you know what I'm saying, we're pretty open and we like pagans. So come on out and meet us, and who knows what'll happen. It's usually a really good time. We talk about pagan stuff, and then the rest of the, for about 10 minutes, and then the rest of the hour, we'll talk about all kinds of crazy stuff. And it's always a good time. That's all I got.
Well, we'd like to thank everyone for joining us this hour. Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Rick, for joining us. And I guess I will be talking to you gentlemen next month. And we'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in. And we'd like to thank the crew of Pagans tonight for allowing us to take over their radio station for this past hour. So
yes, definitely. Thank you.
So this is Ruff and Iredahl. I hope everyone has a safe and good night and a safe weekend. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for joining us on WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. You can hear us every night right here on Blog Talk Radio, or download us later on iTunes. Please check our schedule for accurate show times. For all questions, comments, or show suggestions, you can email us at pagans tonight@gmail.com. And let us know how we're doing. We'd love to hear from you. You can also visit us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on LiveJournal. We invite you to tune in again tomorrow night. Good night, and blessed be.